Morning, everyone. Welcome to Grand Rounds. If you're in the back, feel free to come on up front and sit a little closer. This morning, it is my pleasure to welcome Dr. Amy Schiffman, who is an allergist here in Boca Raton. She completed her undergraduate degrees at Columbia University, where she earned a Bachelor of Science in Civil Engineering. She went to med school at the University of Miami Miller School of Medicine at the FAU campus, and did her clinical residency in internal medicine at the University of Miami, did her fellowship training in allergy and clinical immunology at Tulane. She's board certified in internal medicine, allergy, and immunology. She currently is in private practice, and today she's going to give us a talk on the hidden cost of the penicillin allergy.
Thank you. So welcome, everyone. It's my pleasure to be here. So I have no disclosures. So today we are going to examine the epidemiology and the cost of penicillin allergy. Briefly review the immune system so we can understand what skin testing is and what it shows us. Appreciate the pathophysiology of beta-lactam allergy. Can you not hear? Good. Understand the testing procedure, discuss the predictive value of allergy testing, evaluate the efficacy and the safety in particular subpopulations, and then at the end we'll briefly review cephalosporin cross-reactivity. So penicillin allergy. So penicillin allergy is actually the most commonly reported drug allergy in the U.S. Up to 10% of Americans feel that they have penicillin allergy. So that translates to between 20 and 25 million Americans who have penicillin allergy. When I talk about penicillin allergy, I'm talking about type 1 hypersensitivity, meaning within 5 minutes to an hour of taking the first or the second dose of the medication, you would develop hives, swelling, bronchospasm, even hypotension. That's opposed to a non-immediate or delayed reaction, which occurs 24 hours after you take that dose, and typically is a maculopapular eruption, although it can be more of a bullous eruption or hemolytic anemia. In a systematic meta-analysis between 2010 and 2015, the prevalence of beta-lactam hypersensitivity is close to 2% in the pediatric age range, close to 8% in the adult group, and when you put that together, about 3%. And this is verified allergy via either an oral challenge or skin testing. So why the discordance? Well, overall, the rate of positive penicillin allergy has been decreasing over the last 20 years. The rate has gone down from over 10% to, as we saw, somewhere around 3, 5, 8%, depending on the population, over the last 10 years. Also, the actual reactivity rate is waning. I'm going to show you the next slide. And it's possible that the index reaction wasn't actually attributable to penicillin. Maybe it was an alternative antibiotic. Maybe it was the underlying illness. In children, up to 75% of the time that they have hives, it's actually from the underlying bacterial or viral illness as opposed to that antibiotic that they took for their illness. And sometimes it's the interaction between the antibiotic and the infection. So the natural history of penicillin allergy is actually to wane. So people lose the allergy. They lose the presence of IgE to penicillin. Over 50% of patients lose that within the first 5 years, and 80% within the first 10 years. So in one of our older studies, we looked at skin testing reactivity 1 year after the index reaction, and it was over 90% positive. But 10 years later, it dropped to 22%. So that's where we say 80% of people actually lose their allergy. So why are we so concerned about penicillin allergy and how it affects our patients? Because there's a significant morbidity that's associated with beta-lactam allergy. First and foremost is the increased use of broad-spectrum antibiotics. So we see that there's increased use of primarily vancomycin, where it's used between 20 and 40% of patients, as opposed to standard patients where it's less than 20%. There was a farm study done that looked at the prescription for antibiotics in inpatients, and 30 to 50% of patients who are in the hospital received vancomycin purely because they had a penicillin allergy listed on their EHR. So those are very, very big numbers. We also see increased use of fluoroquinolones and clindamycin, and interestingly, third-generation cephalosporins, even though cephalosporins are beta-lactams. So all this increased use of broad-spectrum antibiotics leads to antibiotic-resistant infections. So we have vancomycin-resistant enterococci is 30% more prevalent in patients who have beta-lactam allergy and are receiving vancomycin. And we have increased risk of MRSA, and also C. difficile is seen up to 25% more often. So for the surgeons out there, there's also a surgical morbidity associated with using non-beta-lactam antibiotics. So this was a 2016 study that looked at preoperative prophylactic antibiotic use and surgical site infection rate. So patients either received the appropriate antibiotic for pre-surgical prophylaxis or the non-beta-lactam alternative. And this was a very large study, over 20,000 women having hysterectomies. And overall, the surgical site infection rate was about 2%. But in those who received beta-lactam antibiotics, it was less than that, 1.8%. And in those who received the non-beta-lactam antibiotics, it was higher than 3%, with an adjusted odds ratio of 1.7. In a more current study, which was actually from 2017, they looked at not only hysterectomies, but they looked at orthopedic surgery, colon surgery, and CABG. And their total infection rate was about 2.7%, but for those who received the non-beta-lactam antibiotics, their adjusted odds ratio of having a surgical site infection was 1.5. So there is morbidity in that respect as well. So I'm going to give you a lot of numbers and data, and where's all this data coming from? So in the allergy world, the primary investigator of a lot of these studies is a physician named Eric Macy. He's in California, and he has the benefit of working with the Kaiser Permanente Foundation, and he has access to this huge database of all these patients that are part of the Kaiser Permanente Foundation database. So in this very, very large retrospective matched cohort study of 50,000 patients with penicillin allergy matched with 100,000 controls, they looked at 3 years of the results of these patients receiving non-beta-lactam antibiotics. What they found is that about 11% of hospitalized patients come in with a penicillin allergy. And they had two sets of goals. Their primary goal is what are the total number of hospital days that were used, and they used this as a driver of healthcare cost. The secondary goals were specific antibiotics that were used and the prevalence rate of the antibiotic-resistant infections. And what they found is that in patients with penicillin allergy, they averaged 0.6 more hospital days compared to the controls. There was also significant more use of fluoroquinolones, clindamycin, and vancomycin, and subsequently increased prevalence of C. diff, MRSA, and VRE infection. So just looking overall at the top 10 antibiotics used by both the cases and the control subjects, a number of things become apparent. So first of all, the capital N is the courses of antibiotics, and the lowercase n is the unique subjects exposed. So you can see that when you compare those numbers, that subjects on average had 1.5 to 1.6 times the number of antibiotics. So up to half of the patients received two courses of antibiotics. Then we see the top antibiotic that was used for beta-lactam allergy type patients was vancomycin. All the starred antibiotics are the antibiotics that are associated with the increased risk of C. difficile. So the Cipro, the clindamycin, even the third-generation cephalosporin, ceftriaxone, are all associated with C. diff. So that's the risk there. The vancomycin, there's the risk of VRE. So why do these patients have an increased risk of getting MRSA? We actually don't have a great answer for that. But what I also want to draw your attention to is that ceftriaxone, again, fourth antibiotic that was given to patients with penicillin allergy and tolerated. So we talked about some of the morbidity. Let's talk about some of the economic costs of beta-lactam allergy. So in the outpatient setting, the medication cost alone is about double, so closer to $30 than $15. Inpatient, those costs increase to over $200, $250. That's just the cost of the medication. Then you have the increased cost of hospital stay. So on average, and this is probably lowballing it, the average stay in a Florida hospital, around $2,000. So if it's 0.6, that's $1,200 per hospital stay, increased cost per patient. The Eric Macy and his associates estimated the potential cost savings for penicillin skin test compared to the extended hospital stay at $60 million during this three-year drug study, during this three-year study period. And that actually included the material costs of doing the penicillin skin test. It didn't include the cost of the allergist. And that's per hospital stay. So if you multiply the cost savings over utilizers of healthcare costs that have multiple hospitalizations over their lifetime, the cost savings multiplies. So this is just one more study looking at the clinical outcome of a penicillin allergy label. This was a little bit of a smaller study, but still 12,000 patients. This was done at the University of Maryland. And it really agreed with the Eric Macy studies. This was about 11% of patients who say that they have a penicillin allergy. And their findings were that the length of stay was greater than 0.6. It was actually 1.2 days longer. They also had increased odds of admission to the ICU, more than one course of antibiotics, and interestingly, increased risk of death. However, they did not associate it with increased rate of readmissions. So we have an electronic health record. In the electronic health record, we document what patients' allergies are, but we also document what they received. So we would think, oh, if a patient received penicillin, then we can clear that penicillin allergy label from their chart. But in fact, that's not the case. So that's part of the reason that I'm up here giving this talk, is that we all have to work together to clear that penicillin allergy label, to actually look through the chart and see. If this patient ever received penicillin, then they no longer, and they tolerated it, and you speak with them, then you can say, oh, let's get rid of that penicillin allergy label. This was a study that was done in Vanderbilt in the ambulatory care center. And they looked at patients who had come in for greater than three visits. About two-thirds of them came in with a penicillin allergy label. And almost all of them, so 96%, remain persistently labeled, despite the fact that almost 40% had actually received penicillin and tolerated it, and it was documented in the chart. And then they also saw that increased risk of C. diff and greater broad-spectrum antibiotic use. But it highlights how we all have to work together. And what about prescriber understanding? So this was a smaller study that was done at Rochester Regional Hospital. And it was about 300 prescribers. About half of them were physicians. Half of them were advanced practitioners. And only 30% of them identified that 90% of patients with a penicillin allergy label would tolerate penicillin. So after you do testing, there's only 1 in 10 that actually will still have persistent penicillin allergy where you would want to avoid it. Most of them had never consulted allergy, and 42% believed that once you're labeled with a penicillin allergy, it never goes away, that it persists throughout the life. And, you know, I've shown you multiple pieces of data where within 10 years, 8 out of 10 people actually lose their penicillin allergy. So overall, we see that less than 0.1% of people with a history of penicillin allergy actually have allergy testing to help us delabel them. So this is such an important issue that two different organizations, the American Board of Internal Medicine and the IDSA, have chosen antibiotic stewardship as an important champion that they have addressed. So the Choosing Wisely campaign, they state, don't overuse non-beta-lactam antibiotics in patients with a history of penicillin allergy without an appropriate evaluation. So, you know, that's a nice statement. But the IDSA is a little bit more active, and they state that we should promote antibiotic allergy assessment and penicillin skin testing when appropriate. And here's a proof of concept study, so also done by Eric Macy. And this was between 2010 and 2012. And this was 300 patients with antibiotic, with penicillin allergy, compared to about 1,200 controls. They did allergy testing mostly in the outpatient setting. And what they found was, okay, 0.09 fewer patient visits, outpatient, that's pretty modest. 0.13 fewer ED visits, but the mean of it is 0.55 fewer hospital days utilized. And their cost savings was about $2,000 per patient, and a total of $2 million over the 3.5 years. That's for 300 patients. That's it. This was a small study compared to what, you know, we have out there. So the cost savings potentially are much, much greater. I'm just going to briefly look at the immune system so we understand skin testing. So the immune system is basically a network of cells, tissues, and organs that work together to protect the body against foreign invaders. So typically that's bacteria, viruses, parasites. And that's your lymphatics, the bone marrow, the thymus, working together. Two broad arms of the immune system, the innate immunity, which provides early rapid response, so that's within hours, you have your cells that engulf and kill foreign invaders. It responds the same way each time, so it's built into your germline, and it alerts and recruits the adaptive immunity. It says, hey, we're going to give you some inflammation. That inflammation is the sign that there are foreign invaders and you have to get moving. The adaptive immunity recognizes and reacts with specificity and memory. So once you educate it, it's able to react a little faster. And it reacts against both microbial and non-microbial antigens. And its components are basically B cells and T cells. So we have the innate defenses, the skin barriers, the skin, mucosa, fever, all the phagocytes and the NK cells and inflammation, and the adaptive defense. So the B cells basically work against extracellular microbes and toxins by recognizing antigens and then targeting and neutralizing them for elimination. and the T cells, which protect us against intracellular viruses and bacteria. And they help stimulate those B cells. Immunoglobulins, or antibodies, are Y-shaped proteins that are produced by B cells. And these are used by the immune cells to neutralize the pathogens. So basically, the paratope on the antigen recognizes the epitope on the antigen. We have five different types of antibodies. IgM is the first responder. IgA is basically mucosal protection, so the gut and the lungs. IgG is against bacteria. IgD, we don't know exactly what it does, but we have seen in very recent studies that it's more present in the nasal mucosa in people who have chronic rhinosinusitis. And IgE, which classically, or from an evolutionary standpoint, was present to help protect us against parasites and fungi. Now, we don't have a lot of parasitic or fungal infection. So it's turned its attention to fighting against what was considered non-pathogenic and now sees as pathogenic. So that's environmental allergies or pollens, food allergy, and drug allergy. So again, the antigen is that unique portion, molecular pattern, that is recognized by the immunoglobulin or by that IgE. And it binds it, and then it tells the B cell, turn into a plasma cell and produce lots and lots and lots of IgE. And in general, we have the ability, so the body makes 10 billion different antibodies. So very, very, very specific and unique that it's able to recognize. And once a B cell turns into a plasma cell, it's able to produce hundreds to thousands of antibodies per second. So we have a very, very robust immune system. So all of this leads to the fact that we have mast cells. Mast cells are leukocytes or granulocytes, and they have granules with histamine, heparin, tryptase, and cytokine. Once that IgE is produced after the initial exposure, it's bound to the mast cells, so it sort of populates the outside of that mast cells. When the body sees for a second time that same antigen, it cross-licks the IgE, and then that primed cell degranulates, and it releases all of those granules, heparin and histamine and tryptase and leukotrienes, and that causes vasodilation and urticaria, angioedema, bronchospasm, rhinitis, even hypotension. Once you have two organ systems that are affected, that's anaphylaxis. So just quickly looking at beta-lactams, there's two major classes, penicillin and cephalosporins. And this is a model, this is the first model of what penicillin looked like. This is Dorothy Hodgkin, and she determined the chemical structure. She was a protein crystallographer, and she received the Nobel Prize in 1964. So you have penicillins or cephalosporins. The basic circle or is the beta-lactam ring, four-member beta-lactam ring. The penicillins have a thiazolidine ring and one side group. That's what differentiates different penicillins. And cephalosporins have a dihydrothiazine ring and two different side groups. Penicillin in and of itself is chemically inert in its natural state. Under physiologic conditions, it forms a reactive intermediate. That intermediate occurs when it's metabolized by the body and the beta-lactam ring opens.
You know, hitting mute would help, guys. The unmute button.
Sorry, I'm sorry. Oh, sorry about big laugh.
Okay. Yeah, I think they came in. They were unmuted.
We'll just mute them on our end.
Okay. I don't know what you do. I'll let you.
Okay. There we go. That should do it.
Okay. And when penicillin forms that reactive intermediate, about 90% of it forms a major determinant. So it forms into the major determinant, about 95%, and then you have the minor determinant, so you have two smaller ones, or less often. Cephalosporins are also beta-lactams that bind to proteins, but the haptenization is slower and less efficient, and it loses that R2 side group. So you basically just have the R1 side group, and we think that's what confers the cross-reactivity between cephalosporins. So now getting to the actual testing. So the purpose of skin testing is to detect specific IgE on a patient's mast cells. So the allergen is introduced into the skin, comes in contact with the cutaneous mast cells, it cross-links the IgE that's on the outside of these mast cells, and it activates the mast cell. That activation causes a transient wheal and flare. So that's where you get the small hive and the redness around it. It doesn't cause a body-wide reaction. That wheal and flare is just in the skin. And that's what sensitization is. It's detectable specific IgE. In the case of penicillin skin testing, it's penicillin specific IgE. And if you can detect that IgE, it means that you have a very high risk of having type 1 hypersensitivity. And it is the most rapid, sensitive, and cost-effective way of determining type 1 hypersensitivity. So who do we skin test? We skin test people who have a history of having penicillin allergy reaction. We skin test people who have an unclear history. Maybe they just had hives, or they just had swelling, or they just had a rash. We like to do it when people are well, as opposed to when they're sick and in the hospital, but we're able to come to the hospital and do testing there. And there's a trend to really do the testing before a patient actually needs the penicillin, so in the event or for the future need of a penicillin. There are special populations that we're going to look at a little later. So who can't we test? So anyone that's had a severe blistering type of reaction, so Steven Johnson, toxic epidermal necrolysis, or a non-IgE-mediated type of reaction, so hemolytic anemia or interstitial nephritis. We tell those patients, you just have to avoid penicillin. It's really not safe to ever take it again. If you have overreactive skin, so dermatographia, chronic idiopathic urticaria, or you're unable to hold the medications that we need to have withhold for testing, so histamine, TCAs also have high histaminic properties. And we do like to delay testing for about 4 weeks after an acute reaction, because we say the IgE on that outside of the mast cells sort of gets used up, so we wait for it to be repopulated. What do we test with? So the major determinant, so the only commercially available major determinant right now is called PrePen, and then the minor determinants. So we used to have three minor determinants. Two are no longer commercially available, so we're left with one, the penicillin G. Sometimes I'll test with ampicillin or amoxicillin, especially if that was the index reaction, and then positive and negative controls. And we start out doing prick, and then if that's negative, we do the intradermal. So this is photographs of some testing that was done, and there's two ways you can tell that these are older photographs. So first of all, a large bore needle is used for the prick. Right now we use plastic prick devices, and you'll see that the minor determinant was available at the time. So this is all negative skin prick testing. Everything is negative except for the histamine, and we want the histamine to have a good reaction because that tells us our test is working properly. And then we move on to the intradermal. So the intradermal is sort of like a PPD. So we inject a small amount under the skin. So it's a little more sensitive. It'll pick up some reactivity. So in this patient, the penicillin G was actually positive. And we see that you have the wheal, so that central hive that's a little white in the middle, and the flare or the redness around it. And it should be very itchy. So the predictive value. The positive predictive value, so once you have a positive skin test, at this point we don't tend to give you the medication because there are ethical concerns. But in the past they actually did. So what we found was the predictive value was anywhere from 50 to 67%. But these days, you have a positive skin test. We say avoid all natural aminos, that's ampicillin and amoxicillin, and semi-synthetic penicillins. So that would be oxacillin and nafcillin. The negative predictive value. So the negative predictive value of skin testing, so you have negative skin testing, and we did it with all of the determinants, both major and minor, is amazing, between 97 and 99%. Meaning if you have a negative skin test and then we give you the penicillin, only 1 to 3% of people have some sort of reaction. At this point, we don't have two of the minor determinants. So our predictive value, we say it misses about up to 10%, so I say the predictive value is somewhere between 90 and 93%. So in order to make up for that, we actually do an oral challenge on every patient that I do skin testing with. I follow up with an oral challenge. And so that's a graded oral challenge. Start out with a small amount and then increase the dose. And that way, if someone were to have a reaction, they're having it at a very small dose, and we can treat them, typically with just antihistamines and stop it. And that confirms to both the patient and the physician that they're not having a reaction. And that gives everyone the confidence to give them penicillin in the future if they were to need it. So wouldn't it be nice if all like you had to do, you said, why do I have to go through all this skin testing? They're blood tests for IgE. We can look at food. We can look at pollen. You can order an IgE to the major and the minor determinants, but they're of unknown predictive value. So they're no good to us. It's about 50-50. You can flip a coin or you can order the IgE serum test. There's no difference. So sorry, gotta send them to us. So a patient had a skin test and it was negative. They did an oral challenge, it's negative. They don't need the penicillin. And so they say, can I take that penicillin a year later or 2 years later? Or they had the skin testing, they had a dose, or they had a course of antibiotics, and they need it again in 2 years. Do they need skin testing again? And what we see is they actually don't need repeat skin testing. Maybe in a patient who had a very significant index reaction and then had skin testing, it was negative, and then they had parenteral administration, then maybe in subsequent doses, we would think about doing it as a graded challenge for the first dose. But overall, we see that patients have new drug reactions at about, this is just the general population, anywhere from 0.5 to about 5%, which is a very broad range. But the higher rate is really dependent on gender and other drug reactions. So what we see is if a patient received it the parenteral route, older females and patients who have multiple drug intolerances have that higher rate. Multiple drug intolerances is just lots of non-IgE-mediated reactions to many different classes of drugs. So most people, about 2 to 3% of people, develop new drug reactions over their life. So I'm just going to tell you about a patient that I saw, a 43-year-old man with a history of asthma, active IV drug use, and an adverse reaction to penicillin. So he was found to have MSSA bacteremia. He received vancomycin. They were never able to achieve a therapeutic level. He received aptamycin, but still had consistently positive blood cultures. So I came to see him. He said at age 3 and 4, he had gum and facial swelling and maybe some respiratory compromise. And most importantly, the infectious disease, people said, you know what, nafcillin is the therapeutic agent of choice. So once you tell me that, okay, let's do our testing. So I did the skin prick. I did the intradermal. All of it was negative. I explained to him 90 to 93% predictive value. Let's move on to the oral challenge. So I did the oral challenge with amoxicillin. I put a small amount on his lower lip. I call that the mucosal challenge. He said he had some throat discomfort. I examined him. There were no subjective signs of any sort of reaction. So we proceeded, and he did the full oral challenge, and he tolerated it. Great. So most importantly, what did I do? I went into the EHR and removed the allergy. So that's gone. then explained to him that his risk of future reaction is that of the regular population, and started him on nafcillin. Over the next 3 days, he actually developed this progressively worse morbilliform maculopapular type eruption. He said it was there on his back before starting the nafcillin, but it progressed to basically his entire body. We started him on second-generation antihistamines twice a day, and that helped with the itching. So I went to see him, talked to him, possible etiologies. Could have been a hypersensitivity reaction to any one of the three antibiotics that he took. Could have been viral-induced, or could have just been a heat rash. He was sitting there with his blanket up to his neck. Talked to him. The itching had improved, and we decided to just continue therapy. And eventually, the rash resolved, and he had 6 weeks of therapy. So I highlight this patient because in up to 10% of patients, you can get that delayed maculopapular eruption or rash. And you don't need to stop the antibiotic. You just treat through it, and then eventually it goes away. So just looking at a couple of subpopulations, skin testing in pregnant women. So this was a small study, a little over 50 women, who had GBS colonization and a history of penicillin allergy. So they were skin tested. There were two reactions overall with the skin testing, so generally very well tolerated. One of them had itching and hives, and she actually had a positive skin test. One woman had fainting, and she actually had a negative skin test. There were three positive findings, and almost all of the patients received intrapartum penicillin for GBS prophylaxis. Two had delayed onset rashes, so that's about a 5% rate, so, you know, it does happen. And one actually had immediate onset rash, but she wasn't even treated with penicillin. She was treated with vancomycin. And she actually was the woman who fainted. Skin testing in hospitalized patients, so we see patients all the time. So the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease did a study and looked at skin testing and the safety and the predictive value in hospitalized patients. And what they found is that the rate of positive allergy was about 11%. So patients in the hospital tend to have a higher rate of positivity than outpatients. But overall, it was safe, it was well tolerated. And this was done with both major and minor determinants, so the predictive value was excellent. It was 99%. And anyone who had a reaction, it was a minor reaction that was able to be treated effectively. Last population I'm going to look at is the pediatric population. And again, penicillin skin testing is safe, it's effective, and it has a good predictive value. This was about 800 children. Their rate of positive skin testing was a little higher than what we see these days. And about half of them had an oral challenge after negative skin test, and the rate of reaction was a little closer to 4%, but it was very mild, and all of them were treated with just antihistamines. There was no need for epinephrine. So safe and effective. And last, I'm just going to talk very briefly about cephalosporin use. So cephalosporin is actually the most common antibiotic class that's used for both people with penicillin allergy and those without. The CDC says there's about a 2.5% cross-reactivity between cephalosporins, but that's mostly first-generation cephalosporins. When it comes to second and third generation, the language that they use is negligible, so very, very little. The cross-reactivity between cephalosporins is mostly related to that R1 side group. And if a patient is allergic to penicillin, then they have a greater than 30% cross-reactivity to cephalosporins that share that same R group. So it's the middle of the night. Someone says that they have penicillin allergy. It's safe to give them. Carbapenems or aztreonam. Less than 1% reactivity between carbapenems, aztreonam, and penicillin. And this is a very busy slide, but what this slide is telling you is that if you have a question about cephalosporin cross-reactivity, call the allergist. We have all of our charts and tables and investigated this, and we'll help you out. So I hope I've demonstrated to you today that penicillin testing is safe, it's reproducible, and it's effective in delabeling up to 90% of people with a history of penicillin allergy. You have less healthcare utilization, fewer broad-spectrum antibiotics, and significant cost savings. So if you had to look at all your patients, who are the highest yield patients to do penicillin testing on? So anyone with a remote history, because we know that a lot of people lose their reactivity. Anyone with multiple listed antibiotic allergies. So we may be able to identify that they're not allergic to penicillin and therefore they have a therapeutic option. Anyone with penicillin allergy and a higher risk of infection, so that's people with diabetes, HIV, malignancy, or are immunosuppressed. And in patients with a penicillin allergy label, when the therapeutic agent of choice is beta-lactam. So we have a patient, they think they have a penicillin allergy, we do the skin testing, we do the oral challenge, all of it is negative. They can receive penicillin. So what are they going to do with their tattoo? Thank you for your attention. Any questions?
So, if you have a known hypersensitivity reaction, does one still proceed with penicillin, or do you avoid penicillin because of the fact they had a rash only in the past?
So, are you talking about, so if they had a rash only in the past, then you send them to talk to the allergist, because if it occurred after 24 hours, it's unlikely that's a type 1 hypersensitivity. So then we would proceed with the skin testing to see if at this point they're still, reactive.
So you still will give the penicillin even though you know you will induce a rash?
If the skin testing is negative, yes. And the oral challenge. Then we would, if the skin testing is negative, we proceed to the oral challenge, and then we watch them. So we give them a graded challenge. Because what we're concerned about is a life-threatening reaction, which is the type 1. The maculopapular eruption is not life-threatening. It's annoying, it's itchy, but it doesn't prevent you from receiving the penicillin.
What about in an outpatient setting when you may not want to induce a rash?
You don't have to give them penicillin if you have a therapeutic alternative. But if you don't, then that's when you would want to, I explain to all my patients that it's possible to have a rash, but that rash is not life-threatening. Take Zyrtec and you can treat through it. It'll go away.
Desensitization, what is an appropriate patient for that? What's the difference
with RAO? So desensitization is for someone who has an actual IgE reaction, so immediate hypersensitivity. We only do that in the hospital, and it's about a 12-step process for when that can be applied to any sort of medications, and that's if that's the only therapeutic option that you have, then we give that in small and increasing doses to achieve temporary tolerance. So while they're still receiving that medication, they can receive it. Once they stop, they go back to being allergic. So that's what induction of tolerance is, or temporary desensitization. So any patient that really needs that medication.
Told them they were allergic.
Right, so I kind of, so
it was a false positive.
So it wasn't a false positive. So it's not that it was a false positive. There was what we detected was the presence of IgE on the mast cells. But again, going back to the predictive value was only 50 to 67% effective. So just because you're sensitized to something, so if you had a skin test and we tested you to, and your wheat was positive, but you eat wheat and you tolerate it, you're not allergic to it, you're sensitized. So there's a difference between sensitization and allergy. So the patient is sensitized to penicillin, but not allergic. Or maybe they're sensitized to a different, so there's, the different R groups, so maybe it's a specific R group and they're able to tolerate ampicillin or amoxicillin. So it's, but this is the best testing that we have. if a patient really feels that they don't, then you give it to them in a graded challenge. That's the safest way to give a medication if you have a concern. Well, 90% are not allergic, actually.
More than
Yes.
I just want to ask you a logistical question. So say we have an inpatient, you say they have a history of penicillin allergy, you want to give them a penicillin, what's the likelihood of having an allergist yourself or someone come to the hospital within 24 hours and skip that?
I have come to the office within 24 hours on multiple occasions. So ID asks me, you know, often, and we come.
Is it possible to have a skin test in the emergency room for people to be admitted? If it's as simple as a PPD, why can't it be placed in the emergency room?
So, you know, first of all, it's not as simple as a PPD, so it's a multi-step process. So there's the process of first doing the skin prick, then doing the intradermal, so that's the PPD portion, and then the oral challenge part, which is the way I do that in the hospital, is the first dose I have them observed. So they get it 10% and then 90%, and they need to be observed for an hour. And then I'm, you know, we're in clinic, so yes, I come within 24 hours for a patient that's hospitalized, but to be there in the emergency room, you know, the timing may not always work out. I guess it's possible. If the timing works out, they're there when, you know, I'm not in clinic and you call me and I can come in and do the testing.
Why wouldn't they do straight dermal and skipping straight intradermal?
Why? Because intradermal is more sensitive. So we really like to rule out the less sensitive one with the prick and then do the... There's safety that's involved, so we like to do the most, you know, this is our protocol, and this is a protocol that's been looked at for hundreds of thousands of patients. Okay. Thank you.